Welcome back, folks. Episode 43 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we talked about what? Auditing lighting systems using high-tech software. Greg, what do you use to audit lighting systems? Pen and paper?
High-tech software like pen and paper and an Excel spreadsheet currently.
Yeah. So Jeff Seifert talked to us a little bit about some apps that a company called Streamlinks makes. It's called SnapCount, powered by Streamlinks. And we talked about his software. We talked about the pros and cons of auditing and how to do it. And guess what? Get a grip on lighting listeners. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by SnapCount, powered by Streamlinks. Go to streamlinx.com. That's streamlinks.com to find out more about SnapCount. Greg, SnapCount brings all of the different aspects of auditing together. And if we didn't like it, we wouldn't let them advertise on the show. You guys all know that we're legit. So SnapCount brings together the audit, quote, proposal, project implementation, service and maintenance, and has partners that do your incentive rebates. It integrates with Salesforce QuickBooks. It has a custom API, a vendor portal. Man, it's got a lot of stuff that my system doesn't have, Greg.
It does, and I'm in the same boat right now. And as a business owner, and more importantly as a person, the thing I value most is time. And using this system really looks like it can save you time, and versus what I'm doing now currently, at least. There's no paper, no pencil needed. You can use a smart device. You can take pictures when you're on site of the material that you're going to be upgrading. You can take notes within that. You
That's
can automatically
through the app. Right?
Through the
app. Take a picture. You don't have to like load them in after. Oh, yeah. Man.
You can put foot candle levels. You can put layouts. You can put everything. And then you can upload it right into your system so you can get your audit started right away or even complete it.
Ooh. I mean, yeah, you could do it right there on site and email it to the guy before you leave. So go to streamlinks.com. Awesome. That's streamlinx.com. SnapCount powered by Streamlinks. Man, you know what? I've been using my system for 14 years, Greg. I still run Windows XP on some of my computers because I don't want to upgrade it, man. That's how
might be time to get a grip, bud.
Might be time to get myself into some SnapCount. We'll see what happens after this show. And always, you guys know that it's brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org, baby, nail.org. But for now, we got Jeff Seifert of SnapCount on episode 43. Of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing there, Michael?
Doing well. Say hi to Greg Gehrig.
Hey, Greg. How's it going?
Hey, good, Jeff. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.
Jeff, tell us a little bit about SnapCount. What do you guys do there?
Yeah, SnapCount's a digital platform for, we help retrofit LRCs. We help the green teams of distributors and ESCOs go out and audit, provide solutions, quote faster, deploy their projects with less time and energy. So really we're providing them to win more projects at a lower cost of project development. That's the start of it. And we're adding elements of an ecosystem where partners can work together in a digital way, a digitally engaged way. And we just made some announcements at Light Fair, getting partly into the supply chain portion for that market segment. So yeah, there's a lot going on right now.
Tell us about the supply chain portion.
Yeah, we introduced at Light Fair in May something called Snap Source. And what it does is it provides a platform for our customers to tap into a global database of manufacturing parts. And if you rewind the clock 10 years ago, you guys know this better than I do, and you're walking through a building, every lighting contractor we talk to, they have every fixture memorized, both the existing and the proposed, and down to the part number, every darn last part of the SKU. And that's not possible anymore because with the solid state lighting and LEDs, it changes so fast. The product cycles are so short. So we're working with the manufacturers directly to get a solid source of that data into a database that our clients can quote and then ultimately order directly from the platform and provide visibility into that entire supply chain.
What manufacturers are you?
You go ahead, Greg. Yeah.
Well, we just announced this, so it's rolling out this fall. I don't have announcements yet, but we'll let you guys be the first to know who's on that list. We're working with right now top 10 But also, you know, what's important is that we take feedback from our client base. We have over 4,000 users right now, a couple hundred companies, and most of them are retrofit focused. And so really the feedback, the list of manufacturers comes directly from our clients.
So do you have the existing products database in there as well? Like two lamp, four lamp T12 troffer or whatever, or is it just the new products that are in there?
Well, we do. What we provide in our platform is kind of a starter kit of the existing technology. It's, I don't know if you guys are familiar with kind of the Deere's list. It kind of was modeled at First Energy years ago, and it seems to be what many of the utilities appreciate in terms of lamp codes and fixture codes. And most of our clients are using that platform. They can certainly customize it. You know, a lot of the big ESCOs have their own nomenclature that they want to implement, and we can do it either way. And it obviously derives wattage and everything else, ballast factors. But we do have a starter kit of existing fixtures, the top, you know, X number of what they encounter.
What's the number you have?
You know, I don't know the exact. It's in the thousands if you look
at
all the...
Is it in the tens of thousands or is it in the thousands?
Yeah, well, I think if you put attributes on there, it certainly could if you did all the permutations.
Sure.
Because the builder actually lets you build out all the, you know, technology, lamp code, fixture, is it recessed, is it, you know, et cetera. So it has all the attributes to it as well.
Why would someone want to edit the content of an existing fixture? Because at that point when you're going to change it, what do you care about the nomenclature? It's a two lamp T12, 4 foot, 8 foot, whatever it is.
Well that's a great question. You know, that is a great question. I think, you know, we have a lot of veterans of the lighting industry, you know, as clients. And, you know, some of them have created their own way of scoping things out. And they're just more comfortable with their own nomenclature. So that's typically why they'd want to add one. I mean, every once in a while you run into something decorative or, you know, explosion proof that's not typical. And so obviously you'll need to override the defaults. You know.
All right.
But, yeah,
can you break
it's
down
a great
the,
question. Sure.
Yeah. Maybe if you break down the process from the start to the finish of this and how it works.
Sure. So, you know, in the past, people would take a piece of paper out to the field. They take a camera and walk through the building. They might have a blueprint, you know, in one hand. They'd have a light meter. So instead of doing that with paper, pencil, disconnected photographs, they take an iPad out or an Android tablet, and they can pull in, you know, whether if they're doing outside work, they can take a Google image map, drop pins on it. They can take the internal floor plan of the building and drop pins on it, and it pulls up a detailed list. And you can specify what fixture, what the operating hours are, the ceiling heights, how it's mounted, any existing controls. You know, would I need a lift to retrofit this space or not? I could take foot candle readings. The idea here is to get you quickly through the building. Obviously, sometimes you're with an engineer who might be hurrying you through the space, and be able to digitally capture everything in a very detailed way or not detailed way, depending on, you know, what the scope of your project is. And then once you have all that data collected, it's just a push of a button. All that data is synchronized to a cloud-based system where you can start putting solutions on the space, as well as a calculating all your energy savings and maintenance savings, HVAC savings. You can look at controls and labor, and then provide a very comprehensive and compelling proposal for the customer to move forward on.
Do you get revenue from any other source other than software users, like the users of your software?
We don't. You know, one of the things, you know, we're very adamant about is that, you know, we want to be the helper of a marketplace, not a market player. We have no interests in manufacturers, distributors, contractors. We are a platform that helps optimize.
Because you guys have a lot of, you guys would have been able to compile a lot of valuable information that would be valuable to other people other than the people that are using it.
Sure. That's correct. No, it is. And you know, our agreement with our customers is their data is their data. Now, we do have methods, especially when it comes to SnapSource, where normative de-identified data that is helpful to the industry can be leveraged. And in a case like this, so, you know, let's just say that a manufacturer who supplied their parts into SnapSource wanted to do some forecasting. Well, they can see from the very time the number of high bays that were audited in a certain region of North America, they can start to get a sense of what the demand cycle is coming down the path.
Can they drill down further into that?
Well, they can drill down to it, but there's only so far they can drill. You know, one of the things that we've had to, you know, we've gotten feedback from our clients is, as you guys know, the routine is that if I go to my agent to get maybe an SPA or a special price, they're going to ask who the customer is. And, you know, a lot of the contractors are paranoid about that.
I just lie to those people. They deserve to be lied to.
That's exactly what they
do. They deserve to be lied to. It's like, right. What's the job name? Okay, buddy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Premier Lighting is the job name. That's what I tell them. Premier Lighting.
Yeah, right. Well, that's exactly what happens. That's exactly what happens right now. I mean, yeah. You know, that's how, and everyone knows it. And,
you ask a stupid question, you deserve to be lied to.
Exactly. Like, okay, I just did all the work to go develop this deal. I knocked on the door. I developed it.
Sure.
Right. So who can't understand that? Right.
So lots of people can.
Data, yeah. This data is stored in the cloud then, and so who actually owns it? Is it the subscriber or you guys?
So if you look at things like customer name, my pricing, if I'm taking the role of a contractor or a lighting retrofit contractor, you know, anything that's pertinent to their business, the customer, you know, their deal they're doing, their pricing, I mean, that's all their data. That's not something that we ever toy with. You know, the only thing that we would normalize is, you know, general activity. I mean, we may look at, obviously, we if we're supplying the existing fixture code, when we find new ones, that goes to a master list, unless they, of course, have their own, you know, unique code, because it's only specific to them. So one of the powerful things about SnapCount is it can be highly tailored to you know, what companies need. And so we have a lot of very large companies.
So people are actually entering their labor costs into SnapCount as well, right? So like how much they charge
to install
a ballast or to replace a high bay, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And they can do that either by, you know, by an hourly rate, based on the location of the job, whether it's prevailing wage or not prevailing wage, or they can actually have a list, a table of labor SKUs. If they
see,
want
I would pay you just to review everybody else's data.
Yeah,
like, I would actually. That, yeah. Like, I mean, I hate to say that, but like I think SnapCount's more valuable to seeing like an average labor cost by geography or something like that, and identifying an area where people pay a lot to do lighting work. And I mean, I hate to say all this, but to me, the back end data is way more enticing to me than the front end use.
Would you be willing to share to get?
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Right. No way. No way.
I mean, that's the idea, is that especially if you knew it was de-identified, right, and you just wanted to get and we do have programs where if people are against give to get, if you want to share, you know, we'll give you a scrubbed up, normalized view of things. We have not gone down the labor path because it just varies. It's so variable, you know, depending on who the company is, what their deal is. Are they national? Are they local? You know, how do they go about labor? Labor is one of those things. It's so.
So this is a Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. So it's not exactly about SnapCount. I'm going to go off topic right now with Greg a second here. Jeff, give me a second. Do you remember when we used to get those awesome PAR reports from Nailed?
Yeah.
And if you participated, and everyone was so nervous about participating, and only the people that participated in the PAR report got the information. But when you got it and you saw the different averages of what people were paying, different people and top guys, and how much their gross profit was and what their net profits were on average and the owner's take and all this kind of thing, those reports were unbelievably interesting. Did you agree with me?
They were.
Greg?
Yeah, they were.
Did you guys share for those reports?
Yes, our association did. Yeah. Right. And if you didn't share, you didn't get.
Right. So then how accurate is the data when you do that? Because not everybody shares. So that, but it was nice to have, but it was a small sample.
I guess, you know, at what point in time does it become statistically significant, right? I mean, you know, if you look, not that if you would look at polling numbers, not that they're always accurate, obviously, but I mean, they only sample a relatively, at least seemingly small, you know, group of the population.
They have no idea who's going to win elections anymore. They have no idea.
Right.
No, seriously. No. I mean, first of all, depending on, you know, the type of people that answer a landline. So like people that are like left wingers are more likely to answer a landline phone than right wingers. And then you have like people that are on this side of the spectrum are more likely to answer questions to a pollster than the people on this side. So they're always skewed. But what we're off topic. But the point is that I like your back end data better than the front end data. Are you guys considering doing something like that, offering that to your users?
Well, you know what? We ultimately, you know, it all starts with the customer for us. We listen to our customer, our marketplace. You know, we want, you know, we want to provide them things. You know, our purpose for existing is to empower energy optimization. And we're not talking about kilowatt hours. We're talking about the human energy that you use inside of your workflow. There's a lot of waste when we look at the retrofit industry. I mean, you know, paper, pencil, re-entering things six different times on a current project. You know, the client tells you to move this, cut out the west wing. Let's try that LED. Let's drop the controls. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth, and we're trying to really help revolutionize that workflow so you can go out and go after more projects. I mean, it's a ripe marketplace.
How old is SnapCount? How old are they?
We started in 2011, and we wrote out our first version of what's now called SnapCount in 2012. But the work behind this had been done, you know, years before that. We had a kind of a ERP type application. We merged one company that had big data analytic experience with a company that had a workflow management system, brought in those digital assets, and we were out to be able to get a product to market, you know, that was comprehensive and workable very quickly.
Is it a private company?
We are a private company. Yeah, we're self-funded.
Are you profitable?
We are profitable as well.
How many people work there?
We're just shy of 30 people right now.
30, okay. So, and how many of those are software developers?
Close to half are software developers. So, you know, we put a lot of R&D back into our product, which is, you know, one of the things that the marketplace moves so quickly, things change so often that one of our, you know, our strengths is how much R&D we put back in to make sure that, you know, we're staying on the cutting edge, that we're continuing to offer that that advantage, that productivity advantage to the marketplace.
All right. So I'm going to dive back into the process and just understanding how it works a little more. So if you're on site, you said tablet. Is a tablet the only option, or does the cell phone work as well?
You can use a cell phone. It's not the best experience, especially if you're somewhere north of maybe mid 40s. You know, you might want to get the readers out. But we're rolling out a new version of our mobile, which will tailor and conform itself to mobile phones a lot easier than our current, which will be out in about a month. But you know, still, obviously, there's a lot of data you can collect when you go out and do an audit, as you guys know. And, you know, typically we found the optimal experience is at least an iPad Pro or, you know, something of mid scale. But yeah,
do you need internet?
People have done it on phones. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you need internet service to be able to?
No, you don't. It's a self-contained application. So you obviously, the minute you walk into a mechanical room or somewhere, you're not going to have internet access. So it's a self-contained, application and database that collects data while you're on site.
Now, are you able to draw pictures? Are you able to? You said there is layout capability if you have the files to upload.
Sure.
Say you don't have it, you measure it. You want to draw it? You can do that.
Yeah, you can hand draw it. You could snap a picture of the egress plan and make that your floor plan. You can diagram, you know, kind of the existing layout in a room with your finger or stylus. Yeah, you can. There's a lot of different media. Pretty much every media option that a tablet has is you can invoke on our app.
Can it measure foot candle levels on the app itself?
Great question on that one. So we last year had a partnership with a company called Lumu. They're out of Finland or something like that. And they had a little like dime shaped light meter that plugged right into the audio jack of either, they only supported iPad. And then they wrote a little API that we could access from our app, and we could pull the foot candle readings directly into the space in our application. Well, they came out with a new one, and they did not provide an API for it. So that closed off, you know, that whole market, and we helped them sell thousands of those things. So now we're actually looking for a replacement. Those still work if you have them, but they're no longer, that generation is no longer being sold. We're experimenting actually right now in our labs with using the commodity cameras, you know, on the mobile device itself. Mm. And obviously, if you're looking for, you know, extreme precision, you're going to need to take your spectrometer and, you know, get those light readings. Some people are just trying to get a general sense of what the light levels are.
Does your software have an API into other softwares?
We do have an API. We kind of pick and choose exactly which other tools, because there is obviously there's a user experience that you have to. So just because you have an API doesn't mean you can always control the user experience on the software. But we have the capability of integrating.
How many of your developers work on UX as opposed to actually lighting development side?
We kind of have our team divided into the mobile and the cloud experience. And I wouldn't say, you know, the UI is something that you, when you're in design mode, that's when you put a lot of attention to that UI. Once that is kind of derived and you have it designed, you're really just building to it. So we don't have full-time UI designers. Mm. They will become full-time on that facet at times when we're designing a new release. But then obviously they go back to the core code.
Now, this isn't as big a deal anymore, but are you able to calculate square footage per area for tax deduction purposes?
Yeah, I mean, if you know either the square footage or the dimensions of the room, it'll calculate the square footage and it'll roll it up. Obviously, you have to enter it. You know, it doesn't derive it. Interesting that, you know, one of the things we're also looking at is integrating it to measurement of equipment, so you can quickly go boom, you know, just like a laser measurer type thing, where you could quickly just grab the dimensions of the room for that very purpose.
So do you find that, you know, overall, obviously you're saying it's more efficient, but a lot of times, a lot of this information that you're going to have on there, people aren't gathering right now. So is that why it's more efficient, is because you're getting more information up front, or is it more efficient because it's easier to type as you go?
Well, there's a couple of different, you know, we never try to sell that, hey, I'm going to get you through a building faster, or I'm going to see through that locked door to see what's behind it. I mean, you still have the same challenges, you know, of your audit process. There are a lot of shortcuts. Let's say I was doing a school and I had, you know, a classroom that had a certain number of troffers and maybe some cans, you know, I can tally those up, and then I can quickly just copy that room N times. I can either put it with my finger, just drop it on the map, or I can just, you know, duplicate it, you know, N times and then reorient it on my little floor plan later. So it basically, you don't have to redo those rooms, and then you can go back and edit it. If one had 10 fixtures versus 12 fixtures, you obviously would just change the count on that particular room. So we try to give you a lot of shortcuts for getting through and getting it more efficient. The real savings is it comes back to, hey, I don't have to sit there for half a day or however long it is. Take my paper and type it into an Excel spreadsheet, you know, each and every time, and then start building it in my Excel spreadsheet. So, I mean, in that case, we're helping people close orders of magnitude of gap in terms of, you know, circle back time from the audit to the quotation.
So all the guys that I know in this business that have been in it for a while, most of them have developed their own kind of SnapCount kind of software, like not obviously not mobile on a lap on an iPad and whatever. Sure. They're not software development firms, but Greg, you have your own, do you have your own in-house auditing tool that you've made?
Well, we're talking proposal. I still handwrite my audits, but once you then turn it into a proposal, that's our own tool.
Yeah, so we have, it's a desktop computer. So we actually still run Windows XP on some of our computers because it's written in Excel 2002 with an Access database. And it works fantastic for us. Right. But yeah, we're still like, what I do is I just go out and I do an email to myself of all the stuff in the building with all my notes. I email it to myself and then I sit down. At my computer, and I put together a proposal. How many people have you converted from in-house systems to SnapCount? Because if I was new in this business, I'd do a SnapCount kind of thing for sure.
Right, sure.
But you know, our tool, although it is a legacy tool and uses old software, is pretty good. It's really pretty darn good, and it's built custom for our environment and so on. So,
yeah, we've encountered a lot of people that would rather fight than switch. You know, and that's fine. They may change. But we've converted a lot of people when they really start to look, and we have a little, you know, ROI value proposition that we go through and calculate the time of what it takes to re-enter data and then change it again. And, you know, it's pretty significant. You know, it really comes down to then you've got all your project data living in these separate computer files that could be in your email inbox, it could be on a G drive. Sure.
We have tons of data silos. We have data silos, and the, you know, where it's like one's here, something's in an email or whatever else. But the other issue too with this is, I think it would be hard for us to structurally reimagine how our proposals should be laid out because we're so used to a certain way of doing things, the way something should look. Does that make sense?
Sure.
What I'm saying
sure.
to you, the way our proposals look. kind of make it has a certain resonance with us, and
absolutely
we've been doing it for so long, I'd hate to like take those guys that are working in that and have to change them. How do you overcome that, or is that something that you have to overcome in order to switch to SnapCount?
No, that's a great question. So oftentimes, you know, an old sales trick is, hey, let's be the same before we make you different, right? And so one of the nice, you know, components of SnapCount, it's very pliable. So we can say, do you want us to make the output of SnapCount look exactly what you're producing today? We can certainly do that. And so there, you're not out of your comfort zone. You know how to sell the proposal. It's, everything's right where you wanted it to be. And then eventually you could say, well, wait a minute, maybe there's, you know, I see some of your stocks. I've got these cool infographics that tell a story. You know, maybe I'll incorporate one of those in my in my standard template. And so slowly they might start changing the way that they look. Because they want to look a little bit more modern and maybe change their process, but they don't have to. If they like a format, they can keep their format.
Have you integrated with rebate programs?
We have. We about a year and a half ago, we partnered. First of all, we thought, gosh, you know, a lot of our customers are asking for it. Almost every project is seeking rebate, you know, assistance. It's a great, you know, it's a great sales promotion component. We thought about actually building our own, and when we tallied up how many FTEs and knowledge we need, we just didn't
What's
have.
What's an FTE? What's an FTE?
Full-time equivalent people. Okay. You know, people. So one of our customers turned us on to a company called Incentive Energy. They're out of Pittsburgh. And we created an API on a partnership with Incentive. They keep a central database of all the rebate programs in North America. So you know, they're working with them because they also do fulfillment services. They also, you know, scrape the screens when things change. It's been very, very accurate. And so our customers can, at a click when they're working with their proposal, just pull those rebate estimates directly into the proposal digitally.
So after you input the information, I assume you don't have to necessarily put your selection in on site. You just can input the information and then you upload it. Is that how it works? If you don't have internet,
when you're doing the audit, yeah, absolutely. You go through and you just tally up all the fixtures, the counts, you know, the layout of the building itself, and then when you're done, you can either you're at Starbucks, you're using your LTE connection, you're back at the hotel, you're back at your office. Just you hit a button and it synchronizes it all back to the cloud.
Is it subscription based? I assume it's a subscription that you
sign up for. Yeah, subscription. It's kind of like Salesforce type of subscription model. So that's how monetized.
Is it something you have to sign up for a year, or is it a monthly fee, or how do you guys manage that?
We look for annual agreements, and then, you know, obviously, you know, our thing is, hey, we have to earn your business every year because you have an annual opportunity to let us go, and so we need to make sure that our customers are adopting, they're engaged, they're getting use and productivity out of it, so it keeps us on our toes.
How many pages is your user agreement?
Probably six or seven.
It's like a small font?
It's like, you know, seven.
It's a seven.
No, I'm kidding. No, it's probably 10 or 12.
Okay.
It's pretty easy.
And then as far as do you pay per user then? Or is it per company has one master license?
There's a user model, but then you can turn on more functionality with modules. So, you know, we have, you know, everything, the base module has everything from the audit to your solution building, to your quotation and proposal. And then you can turn on a whole project management operations part, which does your purchase order, work order, job tracking, job status.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if it turns into a project management tool.
It does.
Of your customers use that?
Roughly, I would say half-ish. Probably.
And is it like Gantt chart based, like Microsoft Project, that kind of like that?
No, it's not super Gantt chart based. It's really it kind of works as kind of a working live as built document. So as you walk through and you start to complete the job, you can say, well, this room had 10. Well, the guy, you know, the auditor miscounted. Now it needs, you know, 12. So I need to put a change order request in, and you can just, you know, work down through the building, and it live updates. Well, it works the same way as the audit. So it works disconnected in the field. As soon as the foreman resyncs it, you know, home office now has the job status in hand. Usually they do that daily.
How many customers do you have?
So we have over 4,000 users, a couple hundred companies, and some of them are big in the hundreds of users realm. So, you know, we work with everyone from a single user company all the way up to, you know, several hundred.
Do you what's the profile of your users? Is it electrical contractors, electrical distributors, lighting distributors? Do you profile it out to different kinds of users?
Yeah, usually we the LRC lighting retrofit contractors tend to be the go-to market that we work with, but obviously we have some of the largest distributors that work with us as well. They have their green teams. They're kind of
what's sustainability the percentage breakout contractor to distributor kind of deal?
I would say probably 60% contractor, maybe 30% distributor, and in the last 10 probably manufacturers, because manufacturers actually hop on board to help engage their markets or their agents and contractors as well.
So when you get a subscription, do you have the auditing tool and the proposal tool comes with it automatically?
Correct.
Did you say you pay then for the project management, or is that all?
Yeah, that's a different module you can turn on. You can turn on the project management component. Now, some people are, that it's a lot of technology because there's a lot of functionality, and usually people walk before they run and, change one thing in their business before they go to change another thing, which is a preferred way of doing it. You don't want to take on too much at any given time.
Does it have scheduling and multi-job scheduling and stuff like that in the project management tool, or is it just one at a time?
It's not super sophisticated on the scheduling part in terms of like crew scheduling. Yeah. So most people have a master schedule, but by job number, they can pull up all the details of the job, and they could obviously assign it to whatever crew they're working with. But the actual scheduling of the crew itself is something that you would need to do separately.
So I assume everybody who uses the auditing tool also uses a proposal tool?
I would say about 95% do. There are companies that, especially some of the larger ESCOs, because they have their, 20-year-old tried and true, ESPC calculation engine for their performance contracting. So sometimes they'll just use the auditing capability so they can get the data back to home office quickly and start developing the project in the current way that they were doing it. And we have plenty of options for them to export that data into their own method.
Can you do it in terms of like a spreadsheet easily?
Yeah.
You can take it all in per line. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that's in the database is exportable into whatever format you want. So, we also integrate to other systems too.
And if you want to do a proposal, your own proposal, I assume you guys then charge a fee to edit it to our liking versus just using your template.
Yeah, usually it's a one-time thing. You'd say, hey, look, the best way to do it is, either take yours or ours and take your red Sharpie out and mark it all up, tell us where you want things, and we'll do a design. Some people have gone as far as hiring a graphical design firm, and they give us, their art-ready pages, and we'll just organize those directly into the platform. So, the idea is that
how does that affect the updates, though? When you update it, does that get screwed up when you update? No?
No, it doesn't. Good question, but no, because the output is a separate process than everything else, as long as the data field names, remain the same, which they will, especially the core ones, they just land on that page the same way they landed, the prior release.
Now, if you have an existing template, which a lot of people do with product choice selections, and you were just sent that into an Excel file, you guys can then take those fields and put them automatically into yours? Or is that something you count on the user to do?
So let me make sure. So you have custom fields that maybe aren't part of the standard offering. Is that right? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, of your 10 we can options do that. Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we can help you. Whether it depends on where those fields are. If they're, sometimes people audit, they want additional audit data, and the form, the application that runs on the mobile, is very conformable. So if you want to add 15 fields that aren't part of the stock because you're doing something non-lighting or have a certain control spec you're looking for, you can certainly add those. Our support team will add those for you. And it's a one-time thing. And then we can collect them and you can utilize them through the life cycle of the project.
Now, do you guys offer any testing or trial basis for people that are interested in it?
Well, we do. We have something called a quick start. First of all, we would walk through detailed requirements demonstrations with our clients. We do have something called a quick start. It's a small paid engagement that we say, hey, let's go do a pilot project, because part of our value proposition is our onboarding method. After working with hundreds of clients, we've created some pretty good process for getting people to move away from what they're doing now and make it successful in a new manner. And so part of that is, hey, let's take 30 days and let's work with you on your audit, on your proposal. We'll do web training. We'll record it. You can actually always look at it again directly and within your application. You can always revisit all your training. And then we provide a lot of support in terms of helping you get over that change management, you know, bump. I mean, even if you change a phone, you know, it's always an inconvenience to go from what you're doing every day to what you're doing tomorrow, you know. So we
change cannot occur until the pain of staying the same exceeds the pain of change.
Oh, that's poetic.
There you go, buddy.
Gotta write that down.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's not mine. That's Nita Cobain. So I think that's a good place to call it, Gregor.
Sounds about right. I like when you end with poetry.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Jeff, give us your website.
www.snapcount.com. It'll redirect. Actually, our company name is Streamlinks, but it'll go right to our website.
All right.
Hey, one last question.
Keep going.
Sure, that's the best way to close it. But do you do any other types of other than lighting? Anything else for auditing?
Yeah, we do. In working in the ESCO market, obviously they look at non-lighting, environmental conservation measures. So we've conformed our audit tool to do non-lighting measures, rooftop units, chillers, HVAC equipment, switch gear, whatever they're looking to audit. Usually it's just a nameplate picture, manufacturer, horsepower, but we've also put in some of the Azure A forms for non-lighting.
I've cut you off five times in this show, and the number one complaint we get is Michael stopped cutting everyone off, but I'm going to do it again. Is there actually a value proposition for switching switch gear out? Like, is there a cash savings there?
Well, probably,
or is it more like a heat thing?
No, I'm drawing a blank on the actual, where the power comes into the building,
there's a transformer,
power correction, like, power okay. correction, or yeah.
I've always right, thought that power factor and all that was a bit of factor. it was a bit of a black box, dark science. I've heard a lot of stuff about it, but I don't know.
Is it like health effects of lighting?
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of a dark, raise the dark curtain on that and see what's actually going on out there, Jeff Seifert.
Well, we don't see a lot of that, quite frankly. I think in the early days we saw more of it. I haven't seen a lot of it lately.
I haven't seen a black box in a while. Like, put this black box on your panel and you're going to save a ton of money, son. Yep. I don't know. I haven't seen one of those in a little bit.
You guys don't do that?
No.
We're delighting.
You know what the thing with energy efficiency is? I always think it's hilarious when people, we're going to look at the building envelope. The thing that saves you the money and gets you the money back and gets you the big rebate is the lighting. Everything else, it does not pay back within the same period of time. It's like not even close.
No, not at all. It's the best. And usually, even when we work with the ESCOs, I mean, the lighting is what helps bring that longer, payback down. So just about, I'd say, 95% of all those projects have some element of lighting involved in them as well.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about, saving, conserving energy and all this kind of stuff. And really what they're talking about is lighting. Because all the other things that you put together, like HVAC and all that, and there's probably going to be people, Culligan doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, stick to light bulbs. But the reality is that once a payback goes beyond 6 or 7 years, it's impossible to calculate when it's a working piece of equipment that's affixed to real property. Because you really have to start to factor in the unknowns about that technology. It's new. You don't know if it's going to perform. Geothermal is one of the number one offenders of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going on here, Greg, you should have stopped me earlier. But when we were in Iceland, okay, I told everyone, oh, yeah, I have a geothermal heating system in my house. They're like, oh, that's so amazing. I'm over here in Iceland to learn about geothermal. I said, you're on a volcano, buddy. Okay, of course in Iceland, geothermal is going to work because it's a volcano. But in other areas of the country and in North America where there's no volcano, geothermal is very expensive. It's basically electrically heating and cooling your house because you have this ginormous pump that has to run and all this sort of thing. So you look at these technologies. As soon as you go beyond 5, 7, 8 years, it's very difficult to say that there's going to be a payback because you have no idea what's going to happen. With lighting, 1, 2, 3 years, you're out. You got your money back. And whatever, if those LEDs break, you've already got your money back twice before.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the realm of believability and understandability. Yes. and you know? Are you guys doing a lot of non-CapEx kind of things too, lighting as a service, or do you guys pretty much, you know, cash deals?
Yeah, not a lot of those. I mean, there's financing, but not lighting as a
I've
service
done a
at this
couple.
point.
I've done a couple shared savings where I've proved the energy savings to the client and took a piece of the savings and got paid a lot more because of that. You know, where I said, okay, instead of doing this, I'll take 70% of the savings for 2.5 years or whatever and proved it to them and got more money than I would have gotten if I had have just taken the cash. But I find most customers, they just want to pay.
Yeah, well, we also find out is a lot of people they say they want to do that, you know, pay over time, and when you show the savings, they're like, "Well, wait a minute, he's willing to put his neck out on that deal. Okay, I'll just pay cash. Here's a
That's a
check."
sales tool. Yeah, there's financing and the shared. 99% of the people, it's just a tool to help sell them on it.
Exactly. Do you guys do much in the way of the non-energy benefits? You know, there was a Jones Lang LaSalle report, the 330-300. Have you heard of that one? Where, you know, the tenant will pay $3 for energy, $30 for rent, and 300 labor. So to the extent you can like prove productivity with LEDs and controls, you know, that's a bigger winning proposition almost than just the pure energy savings.
The only time we've seen on this show, so we've interviewed a lot of people that have talked about the health effects of lighting, circadian photobiology, and then, you know, other things. The one that there's a podcast coming out that's going to come out before this one where it talks about how the general lighting system also participating in disinfecting surgical rooms and other types of hospital rooms. That's where I think that's a legitimate case of 330-300. Other than that, what we've seen on this show and what I've seen from my experience is a lot of smoke and mirrors. A lot of people talking some tough talk about, you know, the health effects and this and that. And we've interviewed experts, and the experts say it's undecided. The other thing is that with the health effects of lighting, I think there's a lot of misinformation between like, okay, we're gonna blast you with 120 foot candles inside your office of artificial LED light, but when you go outside, make sure you put on your sunscreen and your sunglasses. You know,
Well, we're
it's
not
like,
gonna
well,
put you're
which one is it?
yeah, that's funny. It is. So you're not gonna hang your whole sales campaign on that
No.
300.
No, well, here's the thing. If you want to talk tough from the ivory tower, right, which is where a lot of these people are, Greg and I stand in front of customers every day, and we have to look these people in the eye and say, you know, hey, if you give me $200,000 or give me $100,000, and for me to say that, you know, this is going to improve the morale of your troops, or this is going to, you know, do X, Y, or Z, or produce productivity gains, or you know, track how many people enter your store. I mean, a lot of this stuff is really in the early phases, and people that are actively selling it, I would question whether they have anything else to sell the customer.
Well, I mean,
that.
obviously, I mean, you got to find that what's important to the customer, right?
No, but I would also say that, I mean, I would say that a lot of people that are heavily pushing sort of general circadian photobiological lights that are pushing it very hard to the end user would, I doubt that they're, what's it, technology, what is the word you use, Greg? Technology
Agnostic.
agnostic, right? Because if they were technology agnostic, they would probably offer two solutions there. They would say, here's the cost-effective one, here's the circadian photobiological side of it and whatever, and this is what we can do. Because it hasn't passed a double-blind research stage yet. So, you know, I mean, I don't see
What
it in
about
the
like
300 range
error
yet.
rates, like in a manufacturing sense? Have you guys seen any kind of impact on, hey, I got better lighting, so I'm gonna make fewer mistakes? I mean, is that ever part of your sales campaign? I'm just, you guys are out there every day.
You can say that, but you can't prove it. I mean, we don't, you know, a lot of these are just side benefits that can be talked about, but you can
Right, you don't
never.
put it in the ROI discussion.
No,
You don't
usually what I
quantify.
talk about is what are real numbers, what are proven facts.
So, like, here's the deal. If your current load on your lighting panel is 100, and we do this system, we can do a spontaneous load test before and after. And after, it's going to be 40. Right? That's true. And then, however many hours you use it for, that's your kilowatt hours. Right? So, you know, it's like you can get into some hocus pocus stuff with people, and, you know, hey, you know what is what Kelvin temperature is right, Greg? Which one's the right Kelvin temperature?
The one they want.
Exactly.
Right.
Right? I mean, at the end of
You
the
guys have
day,
practiced this bit before, haven't you?
no, I never, we never practice anything. No, but I mean, a lot of that stuff is, you know, you're kind of getting into opinions. You're kind of getting into
right.
The biggest thing in the lighting industry from the day one I was in it, 2000 or whatever, was the health effects of lighting. Using lighting for something right. other than. Making claims of something other than this is the light level you have and this is the energy it uses. I mean, that's from the beginning. That's been the number one.
Right,
thing
you're always there. Safe. You're always safe with the actual energy savings. Obviously, do you guys use maintenance savings much? Maintenance savings or HVAC savings?
I
probably not in Canada very much, right?
No, I put yeah, I don't do HVAC, but maintenance savings is a real right. number, and I always explain that saying, hey. You take it for what it's worth. You do have to pay somebody to replace these light bulbs, and you do have to buy light bulbs if you're going to keep what you
it's
have.
A factor.
Yeah.
Maintenance savings is legit. It's tough. Labor avoidance is tougher. Labor avoidance is tougher than maintenance savings. But Minnesota and Ontario are HVAC neutral when it comes to a lighting retrofit, because in the winter, more lights will contribute to heating the building, and then in the summer, they will subtract from the
heating
AC.
Penalty. Right.
So it's HVAC neutral, whereas if you're in a place like Arizona, it's not
Arizona.
HVAC.
Right, exactly. Right.
So you can factor those things in for sure. But Jeff Seifert, we got off topic there, but that's good.
A little
good.
Bit. Okay.
We went 45 minutes.
Hey, very nice meeting you guys. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks Jeff Seifert.
Yeah. Right, thanks, Jeff. We'll see.
Bye.
Whew. You want to combine your audit, quote, proposal, project management, implementation, service and maintenance, portals, incentive rebates, financing, lighting as a lumens as a service, lumens, no, Lux as a service, Salesforce, QuickBooks, custom APIs, you got to go to streamlinks.com, man. That's streamlinks.com, baby, to get it yourself into SnapCount, Greg.
It makes a lot of sense to me. It's all about efficiencies when you do business or when you do anything. You want to save time whenever you can. And this system really looks like and sounds like from our discussion today that it will save you a lot of time in that process that you're doing currently. Something that makes a lot of sense because it can contain everything that you need to upgrade a facility with new lighting in one app.
You know what really got me on the show when we were talking about it, when I really grilled them, was like, comparing what my system doesn't do, what I know that no home built system does is compare audit to audits. Automatically, like comparing information from various audits and what you're doing. Hey, how many 2x4 lights have I audited and then retrofitted this year? You have no way of knowing that without pulling out Excel sheets and starting to count stuff up, right, Craig? Or looking at inventory and stuff like that. Like SnapCount provides you with all kinds of really awesome information. It's something to consider if you're in this game like us, Greg and I, for a long time, or if you're jumping in new, you'd be crazy not to look at something like this, actually, because there's all sorts of legacy information in there. I mean, so go to streamlinks.com. That's streamlinks.com. And listen, Get a Grip on Lighting listeners. You know we would never let them advertise unless we thought it was a good product that you guys should look into. So don't even try. I don't want to get any messages from any of you guys out there about Get a Grip. They've gone commercial. They Get a Grip on Lighting. They've sold their souls. No way, man. This product is legit. Go to streamlinks.com. That's streamlinks.com, baby. Streamlinks.com for SnapCount. And, of course, we thank the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org. Get yourself educated. Get yourself a good software. Get some education. Bam, you'll be balling, man. Come on. Go to NAILD.org, baby. And, of course, Jeff, thanks for coming on the show. Everyone who listened, you all listened to 99% of our show. Did you know that? 99%. And I know you all know because you're listening right now. 99% of the show is listened to. That's what we get from iTunes. So thank you very much. And that's Greg and I out. Say bye, Greg.
Goodbye.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is